golf the other day, and my first tee off shot was disastrous. You know, if there were no opposition to that, I decided to take a mulligan, you know, to just do a reshoot. I'll tell you, I was the only one golfing. The other people didn't show up, so nobody was objecting to that. You know, but we don't get that in real life. There's no reset button. And that's why many of the lessons in the book of Proverbs gives us not only the beginning of a story, but it also takes us to the end of the story. The place, not only where a choice is made, but where the consequences, the lasting consequences of that choice are seen. It teaches us why and how to what I'm calling to wise up. Proverbs are key truths and principles. They're drawn from stories, and then they're intended to be reapplied into our stories. Take a proverbial nugget like this one. There is a way that appears to be right, but in the end, it leads to death. Now, you might wonder, where did that kind of story drawn from? It's a short story of what this looks like, can actually be seen if we look at Proverbs chapter 1. Open to Proverbs chapter 1. Proverbs chapter 1, beginning of verse 10, he says, "Well, my son, if sinful men entice you, do not give in to them. If they say, 'Oh, come along with us, let's lie in wait for innocent blood, let's ambush some harmless soul, let's swallow them alive like the grave and whole, like those who go down to the pit. We will get all sorts of valuable things and fill our houses with plunder. Come, cast in our lots with us. We will all share in the loot.'" So it's like a get-rich-quick scheme here, okay, to plunder others. And theft is a common get-rich-quick scheme. It gives us the beginning of the story, what that looks like, and then, though, it will take us to the outcome of that story, which is different than what they're imagining it. And so, "My son, do not go along with them. Do not set foot on their paths, for their feet rush into evil. They are swift to bloodshed." And he will say, that's something that leads to death. So it's a short story, you know, and there's other different kind of get-rich-quick schemes or, you know, ways that you can get things free. For example, I came across a story of a man in Seattle. He was looking for free gas, and so he attempted to siphon gasoline from somebody's motorhome. Now, someone actually spotted him and reported his activities to the police. And when the police arrived, they found the suspect right beside the motorhome, curled up like as sick as a dog. And apparently, while he was trying to steal gas, he didn't put it into the gas tank. No, he put his siphon hose into the motorhome's sewage tank by mistake. Yeah, I don't think he'll do that again. Okay, you know, that's a duh moment there, right? Okay, so you may not have done anything that foolish in your life. Yes, gross. Okay. But don't we all have examples of really stupid things we've done that we wish we hadn't? Mm-hmm. I won't elaborate this morning. I'm sure they'll come out along the way. You know, say something like, "Don't make a mountain out of a molehill." That was undoubtedly articulated after somebody reacted to a relatively small issue, right? And once stated in proverbial form, this nugget of wisdom became a reminder to keep things in perspective. So it kind of becomes posting verbally a sign that I've put up. You know, we can't, at every point that we've, you know, we'd have signs everywhere. But verbally, Proverbs, it's like posting a sign. When you come to a moment of decision that's kind of in this realm, remember this. There's a place that leads to life and to death. Every day we make key decisions in life. Decisions that have real and lasting consequences for good and for bad. The Bible's wisdom literature, and it's mainly Job, Proverbs, and Ecclesiastes. We're going to focus on Proverbs, but it's a thread that goes throughout the Bible. That wisdom literature is designed to help us wise up, to navigate life well. And thus, most Proverbs are memorable capsules of wisdom concentrate. They are truths, one writer said, chiseled in words and polished through use by those who have traveled the path ahead of us. They instruct and remind us that every choice leads down the path of two possible destinations, life or death. Well, let's read Proverbs chapter 1, verses 1 to 7, which gives us the whole aim of this literature. Proverbs 1, beginning verse 1. the Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel. For gaining wisdom and instruction or discipline, for understanding words of insight, for receiving instruction in prudent behavior, doing what is right and just and fair, for giving prudence to those who are simple, knowledge and discretion to the young, and let the wise listen and add to their learning, and let the discerning get guidance for understanding proverbs and parables, the sayings and riddles of the wise. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. Well, first want to look at where are the proverbs from? See, it's the source. You know, what's the source of this wisdom that we're getting? And the opening verse of the book underlines and identifies right away the famous King Solomon as the author of this book, or more accurately, the compiler of this book, since if you read right through it, and I hope you will over these next months, you will find other sources and collections that are clearly identified elsewhere in the book. 30 sayings of the wise, for example, the sayings of Argur, even sayings that King Lemuel's mother taught him. Well, Solomon's wisdom, if you know anything about Solomon, it was world famous. And just a brief quote from 1 Kings chapter 4, verses 29 to 34, give us a little bit of window. It says, God gave Solomon wisdom and very great insight and a breadth of understanding as measureless as the sand on the seashore. Solomon's wisdom was greater than the wisdom of all the men of the East and greater than all the wisdom of Egypt. He was wiser than any other man. He spoke 3,000 proverbs, and his songs numbered 1,005. He described plant life. He also taught about animals and birds, reptiles and fish. Men of all nations came to listen to Solomon's wisdom, sent by all the kings of the world who had heard of his wisdom. What we have in Proverbs is actually a world-class curriculum. And it would have been compiled for the king's son. So often it says, my son, listen. Right? I mean, we think about people in our day sending their kids across the world to get the best education. Instead, he was compiling it and collecting it. This is truly an international education. There's signs of it, as commentators have noted, everywhere. But in Israel, this world class would have normally been a private education for the king's son or the royal court, has been handed out for public consumption to all those who are willing to apply themselves to learning it. And so the final line in verse 7 is itself a precious nugget of wisdom, telling us that only a fool would neglect the opportunity to wise up by studying this book. Now, what kind of education can we expect from applying ourselves to Proverbs? Well, clearly, as the second half of verse 2 points out, we can expect to improve our understanding and insight into life, how it works, how to navigate life well. As commentator Derek Kidner notes, the wisdom it speaks of is the kind that must engage the whole person, not only our power to think straight, but managing our daily affairs, our sensitivity to people, our character, and our morals. So even more important than the promise of increasing our mental capacity is the promise of increasing our moral ability and integrity. Proverbs aims to shape our beliefs, that is the inner life, and our behavior, the outer life, our character and our conduct. That's the point of verse 3. Now, the current educational curriculum in our day, one person has described that the emphasis in our day is on producing mental giants, people who know a lot and yet who are moral minions. You know, the little guys that work with Gru, miniatures, right? Mentally, fill our minds, but we kind of neglect the moral. Reminded of child psychologist Dr. Robert Coles, who's done some amazing work in this area, what he calls moral intelligence. Coles is actually famous. I don't know if you know the little girl in this picture, Ruby Bridges. If you've never watched the movie, you should take that out. It's a story from U.S. history. The first girl down south to go to break through the segregated education system. She needed to be walked each day to school by four armed, police personnel. in order to go into the school, and everybody else left it, so it was only her and the teacher that were there each day as people were yelling, threatening to kill her, hurling insults. And Coles went as a child psychologist to offer kind of his help and support. And he was profoundly impacted by that little girl and how she coped with her faith through the midst of that. And he ended up writing a book called The Moral Intelligence of Children. And he suggested that we need to develop three kinds of intelligence. He said, intellectual, IQ, emotional intelligence, right, EQ, and he said moral intelligence. He said, we have long placed a premium on intellectual intelligence, and the past generation or two have also emphasized emotional intelligence. Yet it is our moral development that allows us to live out our conscience and thus a life that is sane and whole. And without it, we're lost. Well, the Hebrew word actually for wisdom, chokmah, if you want to learn a Hebrew word, chokmah. And it is the word used of craftsmen. So when it speaks about somebody having amazing artistic skills or able or in metalwork or in administration, that is a wise person. That is a craftsman, we would say, in my work of working in construction. You know, you look to the craftsmen, the people who had the know-how, you know, to avoid problems and how to fix them, right, when you got into it. And interesting, the related words like instruction, it's also the word translated discipline. Because it's corrective instruction, both verbally and physically. You know, sometimes you can't like, no, go that way instead, okay, and you take it, you kind of help guide. And so it's both ways of instructing. And also to go along with that. Oh, I was reminded, I was at SFU grad not too long ago, beginning of June, and one of the speakers, a very brilliant man, Dr. Troche, and he was giving some words of wisdom to the grads, but, you know, there was one word of wisdom I thought, that is folly. He said, you know, don't look to an external authority to guide you in life. Just look to yourself. Really. Now, I know we should be discerning about which authority, and even that is a statement about looking to his authority to guide, you know. And I thought, you may be brilliant in some areas, but the Bible would say that is utter folly. Okay? And so it talks instead about acquiring, that is actively possessing wisdom. And thus a disciplined and prudent life is wisdom internalized from a reliable outward authority who is much wiser than we are. So that we may learn to do what says what is right, that is righteous and just and fair, equitable. It's the word also used for straight, you know, a straight talker, we would say. Well, who is Proverbs 4.
Oh. Oh. And it will say dry.
Oh, sorry, I didn't want that clip.
See, anymore. I can...
I changed my mind on that one. Oh, I don't know, I'm lost. You can sort... Oh, I'm on now, we're really getting back. I'll let you sort that out, back to the slide of who is Proverbs 4. Well, the Proverbs, it says, it will say it's for the simple, and at the other end, it will say for the wise. We'll look at each briefly. As verse 4 notes, it's especially for the simple. Now, simple doesn't mean those with dulled intellectual capacities, but those who it also says in the parallel line who are young. Young in terms of being naive. We would say gullible because they don't have experience. They're immature. They're unskilled when it comes to life. You see, there are actually three or four classes of fools in the Bible. The simple is kind of the, you know, just your run-of-the-mill because they just don't have experience yet. And then there's a fool. That one is more settled in their ways. Then there will get to the mocker and the slugger. Like, those are the first-class fools. Okay? We'll explore those along the way. But the naive, the gullible, the primary focus of this book is on the adolescent, who is entering into young adulthood and responsibilities, but they're doing so without the necessary experience and insight required to make wise choices. In the face of the advertiser's snapshot appeals to easy sex and easy money. Those are the main ones that Proverbs will look at, those temptations. In the face of those, Proverbs sits the youth down and walks with them through the motion picture version of life. The one that presents not only the appeal of the advertiser's images, But the tragic and all too real lasting consequences of choosing instant gratification over God's choice. Years ago, there was a letter in the Vancouver Sun, and I clipped this out and saved it because I didn't think this would come out too often, but I want to read it. A Dear Anne letter. Dear Anne, I am 16 and in a well-known private girls' school. Like nearly all the other students here, I have already lost my virginity. Although most people consider this subject a very personal one, I feel the need to share this part of my life with girls who are trying to decide whether to have sex for the first time. In all the years I've been reading your column, I have never seen the honest-to-goodness truth about this subject. And I think it's time somebody spoke out. I truly regret the first time was with a guy I didn't care that much about. I realize now that the first time is a very big step. After you've done it, things are never the same. My advice is, be smart and save yourself for someone you wouldn't mind spending the rest of your life with. Sign me, sorry I didn't. And wish I could take it back. And Anne wrote back, Dear Sorry, I've heard your story before, but never in such clear and rational language. Thanks for performing a real service more than you'll ever know. That's what Proverbs is doing, providing a real and a lasting service for the young and the immature. But verse 5 tells us that it's not only the young person in need of ongoing wisdom. Our need to wise up never stops. And so it takes us from, you know, the one who needs it most, we would think, and the one we think, oh, they don't really need it. And it's saying, the whole spectrum, wherever you fit, you need wisdom. Listen to another letter. This one was written by someone much older than a teenager, but there's echoes. She writes, My age is 67. After 19 years of a marriage that was impossible, in my opinion, I did seek a divorce. I sincerely believed that my children and I would be better off if I got out of the marriage, and this was confirmed and encouraged by therapists. I was 40 and attractive, and I wanted to grow. I thought I did what was best. Recently, a friend said to me that getting a divorce is like getting hit by a Mack truck. It is, for everyone involved. I'm sorry that I did not get better counseling. I wish I knew all the things I know now. It takes so long to attain wisdom when it is needed when one is young. No wonder we hear this repeated refrain throughout Proverbs. Get wisdom, though it costs you all that you have. Get understanding. Okay, so where do we start? Well, verse 7 tells us that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, the beginning of knowledge. Fear of the Lord. Fear of the Lord, you won't understand it by breaking it down into its parts. It's a compound word, just like butterfly. You want to explain to someone, a butterfly, well, you take a fly and you take some butter and you kind of put them together and you got a butterfly. You know, it's just like, no, that's totally unrelated. They just happen to. The fear of the Lord is like that. It's a compound word. You see, to fear the Lord, it means to essentially to submit to his revealed will, whether through the Mosaic law or the prophets, or the books on wisdom. It is, in short form, a deep reverence and respect for God. And when you have a deep reverence, respect for God, your ultimate loyalty is to him. And so when we see this illustrated, I think of Joseph, the story of Joseph in Genesis chapter 39. You know, Joseph's response to workplace temptation. So he's working in, one of Pharaoh's high up people. And the workplace temptation is this guy's wife. You know, that guy's never home hardly, and the wife says, come to bed with me. And Joseph was young and attractive. But Joseph's response is twofold. He says, first he says, how could I ever betray my master's trust? Like, he's withheld nothing from me except you. I could never betray his trust. And then, because ultimately he says, how could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God? There was a young man who knew, had the fear of the Lord, a deep reverence and respect and loyalty to God. And so the fear of the Lord is not just a mere beginner's step in wisdom, says commentator Derek Kidner. It's not something to be left behind, you know, a first step and then you're done with that. But the prerequisite, it's an intended pattern. Fear of the Lord is to wisdom what the alphabet is to language, right? It's the ABCs, it's the beginning, but you always keep using that. It's what numbers are to mathematics, right? The fundamentals, the foundation. There is no true wisdom without this deep reverence for the Lord. So how are we to wise up? Perhaps you're feeling like this fellow. And I think this is Jonah, because he's looking on where he is, and it's in deep trouble. And that little map says, you are here in the middle of this big problem. You know, Proverbs says you can start again right here. Begin, you know, with wisdom himself. In the bulletin, I've put in a resource for you that I want to commend to you. My study Bible had that in it, NIV Study Bible, but it's also available. You can find it online. But it just gives a portrait, an outline of a wise person according to Proverbs. And look at that, and you may say, oh, in character or in relationships or in words, there's an area I need to wise up on. There's a guide, a resource for you to use. But ultimately, Proverbs will say, begin with wisdom himself. Now, Jesus is the embodiment, the ultimate embodiment, the incarnation of wisdom. But we need to begin there. If we don't submit to this teacher and say, we need to learn from you, God, and I need to follow and obey what you're saying, you know, otherwise then we're still kind of in the driver's seat and it's not going to pan out well. That's where we need to begin wisdom. And I'm suggesting choose and learn a proverb a day. That's what I've been doing. I've been getting ahead, a head start on you, so I'm 8th chapter of Proverbs. I'm actually, what I also commend to you is maybe you read a chapter and memorize a proverb a day. And an app that I use on my phone is YouVersion, and you can sign up there, and there's different ones you can do with Proverbs, and so it'll work you through all the Proverbs in a month, and it'll give things that you can do with your kids, a little exercise. Sometimes it even has a little video or something. But I want to commend that to you. That's how we wise up. You know, the proverb says that we are to have it on our lips. Well, how does it get on our lips? Because we've integrated it into our mind. And so I actually use that little handout that you, oh yeah. I know some of you may find this funny. I don't. The computer says I need to upgrade my brain to be compatible with new software. So some of you are at that with the app. But you may also find as you're going into the Proverbs, it's like, wow, God, this is a real shift for me. You know, in here, I'm wanting a new pattern of life. I need you to upgrade the software in my brain as well so I can memorize some of these things. Well, also, collect a pocket of Proverbs. The resource that I gave you, one of the things I'm doing is reading a chapter a day in the book of Proverbs and taking at least one of those nuggets out of there, okay, and to memorize it. And so if you're beginning with chapter 1, I would hope that you would do 1 verse 7. You know, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of instruction or discipline. Only fools despise knowledge and understanding. And to take and to begin to collect them. And as I've been collecting that, it's like, begin to find out, these were gleaned from stories, and in the midst of the day, there are places where they just apply. So we were talking about sometimes how, you know, how much do you help someone out and how much do they need to learn, you know, that, you know, if you don't just give handouts, that they need to learn, they got to work for a living. And there's a proverb that says, you know, the appetite of the laborers works for them. Their hunger drives them on. And I thought, there's a proverb that kind of says it and sums it up. That was obviously drawn from life and needs to get reapplied into life. So I commend the book of Proverbs to you, but especially that Proverbs is not just impersonal knowledge. The fundamental, the ABCs of this is that the Lord needs to be your wisdom teacher. He needs to be the one. Get that ingrained into your life. It's personal. And how much better is that? It's not just a book and you may get to it and you're like, I need help with this. There's a prayer. Lord, I need help with this. And Proverbs says, that's a good first step to wisdom. And as the Chinese proverb says, the journey of 1,000 miles begins with one step. Let's pray. Lord, we thank you. Thank you today, Lord, for Solomon. that as young as he was when he was stepping into leadership responsibilities that were overwhelming, to have to take over from a father who was the most famous of all kings. Lord, and you came and you said, what would you like? What do you need, Solomon? And you gave him the wisdom to ask for the one thing that he needed most. Wisdom. Give me a listening heart, he said. Heart that can hear the instruction that you have to give, because you are the master teacher. You are the resident expert. Lord, this morning we want to make sure that you are the resident expert of our lives. That's step one. And Lord, we want you to teach us in the way of wisdom, as Jesus did. And as he not only embodied fully, he was the incarnation of wisdom. And when we wonder about what we should do, we thank you that you have also given us the stories and the example of Jesus, of one who is truly wise, that as we learn to walk, that as we walk with the wise, we may become wise. Amen.